It's time for the Dr. Linda Mental Show.
Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. I'm your host, Dr. Linda Mental, the relationship doctor, and I'm here along with my favorite person in the whole wide world, the other Dr. Mental.
I am so happy when you say that. It just gladdens my heart. Let's do relationship with your favorite person.
That's right. And every weekend we are here and we're doing life together, but we're also doing it with our audience. We're so glad that you've joined us this week. We've got conversations at our house all the time and with our kids about all this stuff.
Oh, my goodness.
We have a stuff moment at times where we just try to get rid of stuff because
we do.
There's so much.
We do. And, you know, I think everybody should move every 3 years so you get rid of a bunch of stuff. Our son is the quintessential pack
rat.
He
just doesn't have a hoarding disorder. I've decided that, but he saves a lot of stuff. But we really like to collect stuff.
Right.
It's really important to us, isn't it?
Well, I have a question for you.
Okay.
What do these people all have in common?
Okay. I'm listening.
I want to make sure you know who they are.
Okay.
Steve Jobs.
Okay.
Mark Zuckerberg.
Uh-huh.
Jeff Bezos. Larry Page.
I know two of them have something to do with social media. Is that close?
Well, kind of.
Okay.
Actually, it has to do with a whole lot of stuff that these people have helped us, I think, both create and organize. Mm-hmm. But we've brought along a special guest who can help us sort through all the stuff today.
All right.
Dr. Craig Detweiler is our friend who comes to us from Pepperdine University. He's a professor of communication there. He's the director of their Center for Entertainment, Media, and Culture. He has so many degrees, it's crazy. He got an MDiv, a Master of Divinity from Fuller.
Yeah.
Then he went and got a film degree, an MFA, a Master of Fine Arts from USC. It's a small school out there someplace.
You may have heard.
And then he went back and got a PhD in theology and culture at Fuller. So, oh my goodness, this guy can help us understand stuff.
Hey, Craig, how are you?
Hey, hello,
Dr. Linda.
Do
I need to call you doctor after all those degrees?
Thank you, Dr. Linda. Thank you, Dr. Norm.
Well, listen, we want to talk about some of the stuff that is really important to us, which is technology. And you've written a book called I Gods. So it's I, like the little I, and G-O-D-S.
Did you get sued by Apple?
No, not at all.
No, I think
they were maybe flattered. Well, you know, those four people you mentioned are discussed in my book.
Oh, they are. Okay.
And in fact, I would say what they have in common is they run the biggest companies on the planet. Mm-hmm. Steve Jobs with Apple, Larry Page with Google, Jeff Bezos with Amazon, and Mark Zuckerberg with Facebook. They had billion-dollar ideas. And in a sense, they control our technological world. And they are, in a sense, the iGods who dominate our lives and a lot of our decision-making. Their ideas were taking things where we felt overwhelmed by too much. Overwhelmed by too much information. How do I find stuff? I can go to Google.
Oh, yeah.
I've got all these CDs around my house. You can now put it all on your phone.
Right. And you can make a playlist.
Yeah.
And you can get really specific with where to find them.
Right. Or if your house has too many books, well, then get the Kindle version.
Yeah.
And you can carry it around. So we used to kind of be overwhelmed by content that was physical in our house. Now we're overwhelmed by content that is all contained on one little device.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, we hand these things to our kids. And in the old days, of course, we forced them to have a license to drive. But we haven't really given them a sense of how to navigate this encyclopedia that's in their hand, this broadcasting device that's in their hand. So I wrote the book as a parent of two teenagers, trying to figure out how do I help my children figure out digital discipleship.
That's a great term.
How do you follow Jesus? How do you love people in a virtual space of social media? How do you care about others through something like Twitter or Facebook or Instagram? I don't think we know, and that's why I wrote the book to kind of help us figure out how to navigate those relationships.
So is it using it responsibly? Are you getting at the idea that this is a part of every person's life now? So we might as well learn how to use it responsibly and what to do and maybe even have some ground rules about what we do?
Well, that's exactly right. As digital natives, they've grown up with phones and devices. They're comfortable. Yeah. But we also deal with the discomfort of, well, now why is this phone at my table? Why can I be interrupted by all these other prompts in my life? When do I turn it on? When do I turn it off? our kids ever turn it off?
Yeah. Mm.
Do we encourage them? Do we ever turn it off? Or are all of us kind of constantly distracted? I think that it's so rare for us to have undivided attention for each other.
I'm thinking back when our kids were teenagers as well, that we struggled with knowing what to do. Somebody would get a call during dinner. At one point, we were like, okay, here's the basket. Everybody put their phone in the basket. Nobody's going to answer that. We had a rule that you don't answer the phone during dinner, but when we're by ourselves a lot, we do answer the phone in the middle of dinner. It is very disruptive.
Well, it's so invasive. Your boss is calling, or
yeah,
there's an emergency.
You're wired.
How did we, quote unquote, survive without this constant intrusion of information in our lives 10 years ago, 15 years ago? And it's kind of scary. What is it doing to relationships?
Well, let's ask Craig, because he's been studying that.
Oh, I thought you were the relationship doctor. Okay, Craig, you're the stuff doctor. No, that's good.
That's why I wrote the book, iGods, to kind of push the pause button for parents and for teenagers and students to say, before we just embrace it uncritically, let's at least think about what parameters we might want to have in our life. Let's think about how to protect our time as a family around the dinner table instead of starting and ending our day in relationship with our phone. Can we turn it off maybe an hour before bed, turn off the internet so that we maybe have face-to-face time with each other.
Yeah. That would sound radical to a lot of kids listening to this today.
Well, they go to bed with their
phone. With their phone right there.
Listening to the music.
Yeah. So what have you found in your own household? Has this been a struggle in your own household in terms of trying to balance the media that's there, or is it something that you're just kind of flowing with?
We have so many different screens between iPads and iPods iPhones that we've had to, I think, be more aggressive in saying, absolutely, in family time around the table, there are no phones. Phones are off.
Yeah.
Phones are removed. And you know what? Kids actually come to appreciate it
because
it's their only time to be untethered.
That's true. I know a lot of parents ask me this question. They'll say, but I feel so inadequate because the kids are so much farther along with the technology. I don't even know how to monitor anything because I have no idea what they're doing and how they're getting on things. I know a lot of parents didn't know that their kids could access the internet through an Xbox. How do parents keep up with what's going on?
It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
But that is what parenting in the 21st century is all about.
Yeah. It's changed.
That's right. That's right. But this is your new homework as a parent.
Okay.
This is the new research you need to do. And there's lots of websites that'll give you information on how to relate to technology on other websites.
Yeah. I don't know if everybody wants to hear that, but the message you're giving is you've got to stay up with this. You've got to get in there. You've got to know what your kids are looking at, know how they get on, know what those sites do, know what they are. And I know a lot of times I'm asking my kids, I'm like, okay, what is that? What is, show me that. Show me how that works.
And what a great teachable moment that you're now entering into it with your kids and you're allowing them to be the expert.
Right.
How often do we always lord things over them?
Yeah.
Well, this is a great relational moment.
That's a great point. You know, that's a really good
point. You know, we used to put our kids in front of the TV set and let it babysit. We can't afford to do that anymore.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
We have to be actively involved. It's
that's
active
great.
Parenting.
Well, Craig has written a great book, Linda. It's called iGods, How Technology Shapes Our Spiritual and Social Lives. And I recommend it highly for folks who have to learn more about this, as we're talking about.
Yeah, whether you're a youth pastor or you're in a church or you're a parent or you're a grandparent, even understanding as a grandparent, because sometimes you can have conversations with your grandkids that parents can't have. You're never too old to learn about technology. I know sometimes older people are kind of stubborn about it, like it's too much.
Right.
How old is your dad?
87.
And he's on Facebook. And
he's crazy.
Texting, he's doing it all. So you're never too old to learn. Get a copy of iGods because we're going to come back after the break and we're going to talk about how technology is shaping our lives, not only our social relationships, but our spiritual lives as well. We'll be back in a moment.
You can learn more from Relationship Dr. Linda Mental on her website, drlindamental.com.
Well, the other day I was cut off the road by a driver. Now, everything in me wanted to yell, "Hey, watch out!" But I restrained myself, knowing that yelling at the driver would not do much good. And really, it wasn't the best way to deal with my anger. Well, you know, anger easily rises up in most of us. And while anger is a natural emotion, we need to deal with it the right way. So it's not wrong to be angry, but how you deal with your anger is what counts. The Bible tells us, be angry, but do not sin. So what is the biblical way to handle anger? This is a question I answer in my short and easy book to read, Breaking Free from Anger and Unforgiveness. This small book has sold over 130,000 copies. It's because of how practical and helpful it is to everyday living. So if you want to be angry, but not sin, practice what Scripture teaches us. Breaking Free from Anger and Unforgiveness is available on my website, drlindamental.com. That's drlindamental.com, and also available online where books are sold.
And welcome back to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. I'm Dr. Norm Mental, and we get to hang out this week, and I'm so excited about that. And Linda, because our guest, Dr. Craig Detweiler, is helping us kind of work through what for many of us is a scary world of cyberspace, you know, Apple, Amazon, Facebook, Google. I want to really get into those because they've been created as billion-dollar ideas that have now taken over our world.
Right, and he's the author of the book, iGods. If you want some help with how technology is shaping our spiritual and social lives, get a copy of his book. It's available on one of those companies, Amazon.com. So help us understand what these companies are about and how they're influencing and shaping our lives.
Well, Amazon started with just books, but now they are our first and last stop in shopping. And that's because they've been so efficient. Mm-hmm. They've been so good at delivering what we want in a timely manner. And that's a beautiful thing. But what's happened is that I think we have also placed that kind of time demand almost on everybody else. And expect people to respond to our demands immediately.
So instantly, yeah.
Right. As customer service in something like Amazon has grown, I think also our attention spans and our expectations have grown. And so now we expect these fast fixes from each other. We want a 24-hour turnaround and everything. And so now we're expected to operate with the same machine-like efficiency. Ah. And I think that can be kind of overwhelming for us as people. You know?
Yeah, and it does affect our attention span. I know that there have been a lot of studies on the impact of that kind of media in terms of what it's doing to the brain and how those parts of our brain that are responsible for attention are having problems and that we want things quickly now. How does that affect the biblical virtue of patience?
Well, you think about what Google has done. They've taken the complexity of the internet and said, I can give you an answer in 0.00012 seconds.
Is that the
stat? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh,
something like
goodness.
That.
Oh, my goodness.
And they think that's too slow.
Oh,
they're trying to double their speed.
Right.
And so this need for speed and this need for quick answers is lovely in one sense, but that's not exactly how a life of discipleship works. You're not going to get those clear-cut answers that you want. You might have to take a lifetime of searching. If search is reduced to asking Google a question and getting an immediate answer, is that what searching for Jesus means?
You just made me think of that. We are so instantaneous in our need for answers that that has to affect our relationship with God for a lot of people going, well, God's Google, so God's going to answer me that quickly. And God often doesn't.
Yeah.
God knows before we ask. God has the answer on the way sometimes, as it did for Daniel. But in so many cases, God wants us to grow and feel process and take time.
Which is kind of the opposite of what these companies do in their efficiency to try to give us what we want. God doesn't always give us what we want because he knows that sometimes what we want isn't the best for us. And so this whole notion of the Christian patiently waiting before the Lord, and there's scripture after scripture about that, wait before the Lord. I'm waiting on the Lord. We don't like to wait.
No.
So this is it. This new accelerated culture has created kids who haven't experienced that tension or that patience. So again, for digital discipleship to challenge them to say, just because your phone gives you an answer doesn't mean that you understand everything that was into getting that answer. Shortcuts and quick fixes aren't how life works. And to be slower and deeper and more reflective and patient. That's the life of disciples.
If we get cranky with Siri because she doesn't get it right
or
get it to us fast enough, how cranky are people going to get with God?
Yeah.
And with each other.
All three of us are here and we all teach millennials. And we see that in the classroom. We see the shift of they want it now. Mm-hmm. They want it right. They want it spoon-fed. I don't know how many times as an educator I've heard people say they seem to want it spoon-fed. Just give me the answer. And maybe you're saying that's a function of the technology.
That's exactly
they're experiencing.
Right.
What about Facebook, which is one
Do
of the
Do you remember
companies?
The predecessor to Facebook?
What was it?
MySpace.
MySpace, yeah.
I remember youth pastors condemning MySpace as this horrible demonic thing. Don't let your kids get a MySpace account.
I was on MySpace.
And now every church in the world is on Facebook.
As a social network,
yeah,
it's actually perhaps taking us back to an understanding that church was the original social network.
Mm.
We would share each other's lives and what was going on, share our needs, and figure out how we as a community could respond to those needs. Well, in a sense, Facebook does that for
yeah,
us.
Yeah, it does.
And for the next generation, maybe that's where pastors feel a little intimidated by Facebook, that now people can gather online and they don't feel as strong a need to gather in person.
Well, what's missing for me on that is that I can't see the person's face and they're nonverbal. I know you can quick message and you can do that chat, but it feels like I can't do it organically with the person because I can't see the person. Mm. And maybe that's just me being very old school, but it seems like something's lost with that.
It's trying to remember that we are an embodied people.
Yeah.
We need to be able to get physical clues from each other and read body language. And when somebody on Facebook says, I'm feeling lonely, it's not enough just to like that post.
Right.
You actually might need to get in your car, go over to someone's house, knock on the door, go in and give them a hug. If somebody's sick, it's not enough to say on Facebook,
I'm praying for you.
Yeah, I'm praying for you, right? No, that's when you say, oh, I'm going to make some chicken soup and I'm going to bring it over there. I guess I want to challenge Christians to be the last people who believe in the power of the physical body and in actually caring for each other and extending a hand, an arm.
Be the feet of Jesus.
Yeah, to be the feet of Jesus, to be a physical presence in each other's lives.
I think that's really good because one of the things I've noticed is a lot of people, when it comes to social justice, they'll jump on Facebook and it's kind of like what happens in the church. You're willing to give some money, but are you willing to do the things that you need to do that are in the physical to really help a cause?
Well, and I think so many times we have friends on Facebook who we don't even know. And Craig was talking about how he's almost at 5,000. And you can't possibly know all those human beings.
Yeah.
So when somebody says, I'm lonely, how do you respond to an almost total stranger?
I think this generation have a lot of relationships, people they know a little bit about online.
Yeah.
But what we're losing is the depth,
of
relationship. So who is actually close to you? Who do you really bear your soul to? You can't really bear your soul online in a satisfactory way. So how do you go from trying to maintain 5,000 relationships online to really having two, three, maybe even just one person who you really are a soulmate with and have a depth of relationship?
I see that when people come and they talk to me about how they struggle to go deep. It is the first line of becoming a friend. You get to know people. But to move that into a much more intimate, deep relationship, and maybe there's a parallel here you would say with God as well. It's hard to go deep because we're not used to doing that.
It's hard to go deep when we're constantly distracted and when we're taking our cues from our devices. Rather than taking a moment to pause and sort of saying, okay, God, what do you want me to do now? What is most important on your list rather than on this text
that's driving me,
tyranny of the urgent
that
is sort of distracting us from the depth of discipleship.
The book is I, Gods by Dr. Craig Detweiler, How Technology Shapes Our Spiritual and Social Lives. And man, is this a fascinating conversation. Do you have too much stuff in your life? Is technology helping you or hurting you? Let's continue the conversation right after this break.
This is the Mental Health Minute. Here's Dr. Linda.
Everyone worries, don't they? Well, just listen to the nightly news or read the economic forecast or even talk to your family. Hi, I'm Dr. Linda Mental. Opportunities to worry present themselves many times during our day. So why would God tell us not to worry when it almost seems like it's impossible? First, He knows the physical damage worry does to our bodies. Second, He wants to calm us down by taking the burden of control away from us. Hey, we don't have control, no matter how much we think we do. He does. And third, He wants us to trust Him. The root of worry is doubting God. Doubt is not trusting that God is who He says He is, or He will do what He says He will do. So every day, take your worries to God. rehearse his goodness, accept his grace, and walk in the confidence that he is in control and he's working all things for your good.
If you want to learn more about lasting relationships, visit Dr. Linda Mental's Facebook, Dr. Linda Mental, author and speaker.
Well, welcome back. I hope you're enjoying our conversation today about media and how they influence our relationships and our culture. We've got Dr. Craig Detweiler here from Pepperdine University, who wrote a wonderful book called iGods. It's a book about how technology shapes our spiritual and our social lives. And we've been having a really interesting conversation. Before we move on, I do want to talk about Apple, because I know you talked about that in your book. And I have to say, I'm an Apple lover.
Well, we all are at this
point.
I have
everything
Apple.
We have our iPads, our iMacs, our iPhones. Yeah, we're a little bit
obsessed.
And
now we have our iGods.
And maybe that's the point, right, is that we need to be looking at that from an idolatry point of view.
Steve Jobs, he kind of got famous for bringing the tablets to us.
Yeah.
And we haven't had new tablets since Moses brought the tablets down from the mountain.
Right?
So the Mount of Cupertino, right,
yeah.
From Apple headquarters. He sort of dispersed these things. To their credit, they have made beautiful machines.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And in a sense, they've considered who we are as people. And they've brought aesthetics and beauty to something that could be very inhuman.
That's
true. Kind of made machines warm to reflect human ingenuity. And that's a beautiful thing. I think that's why they've gotten valuable, is that they've paid attention. They've taken us back to the garden, where God created variety, and he created beauty, and he created colors, and he created tastes. They've put taste and color back into computers, which threatened to be dry and distant.
But there's a bite out of that apple.
There is a bite out of that apple.
From that garden.
And that's the temptation to feel like we are all-knowing.
Yeah.
And that we are omniscient. When you ask Siri a question, she can answer almost anything on the planet.
I'm not convinced of that.
Well, she's getting smarter all the time.
That's what they say, but I don't know. She has a hard time understanding a lot of commands.
I yelled at her one time, and
you
she
did.
Said, I'm sorry you feel that way.
Yeah. So speak about that, because that's kind of going into the future. We see sci-fi movies all the time where the machines are taking over and the people are getting less
robots
important.
Robots are running the world.
Yeah.
Well, that is what's going on all the time. We don't realize when we have our phone on that phone is tracking our every movement and our every decision.
Scary.
There's kind of a big robot brain in the sky that all these computers are aggregating that knowledge. And it is meant to serve us, but we often end up serving it.
Mm-hmm.
We ascribe too much faith into that technology. And to have Siri as our primary relationship is a scary thing.
There's
a film called Her that was about that, that won the Oscar, that anticipated this awkwardness where we don't know how to do face-to-face relationships anymore because we're more comfortable with our phone. We'd rather text than talk.
Yeah, that really is, to me, the downside of all of this technology is I'm worried, not in a sense of it's taking me over, but I do get concerned, I guess is a better word, about how well we're able to engage with each other the more and more we don't have to do that because things are doing it for us.
And they're trying to create robots who are much more responsive and warm and allegedly have emotions. I mean, the concept of AI, artificial intelligence, is not just being studied. It's a huge industry.
That's right. And I go back to the storytellers. How many different films have we seen that caution us for going down this road, whether it's the Terminator
iRobot or whatever.
iRobot. It's always a bad ending.
Yeah,
when the
it
robots
is.
Take over.
The humans have to put them down and get back in control, right?
So again, this book is trying to say, like, don't usurp that power. Don't give up your independence that God's given you a brain to exercise some discretion. And so maybe it's okay to turn off your cell phone and to be disconnected. Just because the iGods are suggesting it is always better to be connected, maybe it's not. Maybe you do need to take a retreat. Maybe you do need to take a Sabbath day. Maybe you as a family need to make Sunday a text-free day, a technology-free day, and get back to face-to-face and get back to the physical world and get back to the beauty that God surrounded us by.
You see that a lot on Facebook and stuff where people write down that they're actually taking a technology fast. Mm-hmm. So the whole concept of fasting from technology is something that's very popular for people.
Or even the season of Lent, to take 40 days and say, I'm going to do a social media fast as I prepare for Easter. I'm going to think more consciously about Jesus.
Can technology become an idol?
Well, that's what's embedded in the title of my book,
okay,
right?
Okay.
iGods is a suggestion that these can become idols.
Yes.
And so it's a chance for us to realize that there is an off button, not just on that phone, but also in our own life, to remember that the call to Sabbath rest, to not always be working. Because we can take our technology with us, we're always working and we're always on.
Mm-hmm.
We never take a real break. We never take a real vacation because we're still connected to that wider world.
And that concept of rest is so hard for people. I think that's what I've seen in the larger culture, where people don't know how to rest when they are trying to not be connected for a few moments. People are like, I don't know how to settle down. I don't know what to do with myself. I don't know how to just be quiet before the Lord. And that concern that, how do you hear God speak? You have to be before the Lord. I know I see Norm every morning with his coffee in our office. He's just there with his Bible, with God. And if we don't take that time to do that, how do we hear the Lord speak to us if we're always so distracted and we're always so wired? I'm thinking the definition of idolatry is just putting anything above God. And
well,
so that's a caution. So bring it back to Jesus. How do we come full circle back to Jesus?
The technology with these robots, they're sort of saying the flesh is bad and the body is a waste and that we're really just our brain and our consciousness. And look at what God did instead. God said, no, 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 flesh is good.
Mm.
I created you. I'm going to put on flesh to show you how much that I believe in the power of the body. So the incarnation, the Christmas story, is maybe the ultimate critique of technology.
Mm. Wow, that's good. Weird.
Of this robot world. So to care about the body and to care about each other in physical ways, to bring that cup of cold soup, to communicate with a hug, with your presence, by putting the phone down and being face-to-face with each other. That's the ultimate countercultural thing that Christians can do.
Wow, that is so good. And if you want more of this good stuff, I would encourage you to get Craig's book, iGods, How Technology is Shaping Our Spiritual and Social Life. So important. If you're listening to this, get a copy of the book and have some conversations in your church about how to deal with this. Maybe your neighbors. I'm sure this is a great way to engage your neighbors on what do we do with all this technology and how do we help each other so that we're keeping what's important, important. Thank you so much, Craig, for coming and talking to us today. It's a very important book, a very important topic. Thanks again, Norm, for taking time to do life with us this weekend as well. Many thanks to our producer, Pam Miller, our engineer, Caleb Carpenter, and our social media director, Hannah Duke. And from all of us here at Faith Radio, we'll talk to you next weekend. In the meantime, remember, we're doing life together, and it's better when you don't have to do it alone.
The Dr. Linda Mental Show is a production of WQLU-FM 90.9 in Lynchburg, Virginia.